כל היהודים, to everybody. אשר בכל מדינה עשה מלך אחשוורוש, הקרבים והרחקים, those who are so far away, after all, I mean, it was 120 מדינה, I mean, it was such a large area, I mean, it doesn't matter, it doesn't mean that this foreign of Haman, the edict reach every country within the great empire of Achashverosh. It reached certain provinces. But in certain provinces, the Jews didn't know anything about the whole, about this whole, I mean, event, I mean. It was not, I mean, they couldn't broadcast that time. They sent, I mean, the other Rotsim. How far did the Rotsim, I mean, go? How, I mean, they are certain, a certain radius problem, within a certain radius. What's Meir of Esra Medina? The Ram Medina is actually where the letter, the edict, has not, I mean, was not proclaimed, and the Jews lived in safety and in security. And suddenly they get a letter from Mordechai to celebrate. Celebrate war. The Jews were saved. Who was saved? There were no papers, no radio, no correspondence, I mean. Who was saved? The Jews, I mean, within a certain radius from Shushan HaBirohad. So why should we celebrate? Why should we be involved in it? So, Akrivim V'Ochekim, Doctor, as distant, I mean, very distant countries, I mean. לקיים עליהם להיססים לסיים הבוס על החידש הדור ועשים חמישה עשרה בכל שונה ושונה. כיומים השונוכו במיודים מביהם ואחרי השונפח להם לסמיוג ולשמחו מבריינטיב לסיסו ומישת ולשמחו משלח מוזס של הרי ומעטון הסלוויינים. It is solidarity. You might have not been exposed to danger. I don't know. But solidarity is something very important among Jews. כי מורדך, כי הומם בן עמדוס, וקיבו לה יהודים, they've accepted, איס אשר החילו לעשייס, ואיס אשר, this is the order, the process accepted immediately, ואיס אשר כוסף מורדך עליהם. כי הומם בן עמדוס, ראה גוגי, ציר כל היהודים, חושב על היהודים לעבדום, ואי פלפור ואגיר אל הומם לעבדום. Now, so this was all, it's very interesting. Up to here, up to Chav Zayin, Al-Kim Kor, Al-Yom Eile Purim, Al-Shim Apur, means they've accepted Purim only the generation who lived through, I mean, this episode, so to say. But they have not accepted, did not accept Purim for the succeeding generations. So the Kibir Ayudim is Asher Chilu Asis. Those who lived through, I mean, the event, Akrevim V'Chekim, but one generation only. But not as a permanent holiday, as a part of Jewish calendar forever. Then he said there was a second phase to put it. Kimu V'Kiblu Ayehudim Aleyem V'Al Zarum V'Al Kol Anilvim Aleyem V'Leyavir לייסעיסים לשני היומים האלה ככסובם וכזמנם בכל שונה ושונה בכל דיר ודיר משפחו ומשפחו ועיר ועיר מהפורם אל יאו מתחיודים וזיכרם ליוסף מזרום. This is it was like that. The first phase Purim was celebrated spontaneously. It was celebrated just voluntarily, spontaneously. It was not standardized Purim, it was not fixed. There was no law, no religious legislation was passed, nor to introduce the observance of Purim as mandatory. This was only by the Yudim Borei Aprozeis. Mordechai insisted that all the Jews should celebrate Purim, regardless whether they were exposed, whether they think, I mean, they were involved or they were not involved, because there was the element of solidarity, and the awareness of a common destiny. This is number two, but only for one generation. Then later, Kimu V'Kiblu, they've accepted not only for one generation, for the generation which survived, which, I mean, lived through the events, but Aleyem V'Al Zarom V'Al Kol Anilvim Aleyem. It's very interesting. V'Al Kol Anilvim Aleyem. This is very interesting. What does it mean, Kol Anilvim Aleyem? Gerim, the Rasha says it, those who will join them. And of course, I mean, a ger is supposed to fulfill all mitzvahs. Why we are called anuvim aleihem? This is very interesting that what we think of gerim. You see, ger to us, a ger, doesn't mean just one who joined our faith. You cannot join our faith unless you join our history. You cannot join our faith unless you join the fold, our people. Unless you participate in the destiny of the Jew. There is no gerus, just gerus to in order to be mekayim mitzvahs is not enough. A ger means a brother. Even though racially is a stranger, racially is alien to us, his parents were certainly not involved. But once he joins us, he is a part of our history. He calls Avraham Elokeinu Elokei Avraham, I told you once, and he is involved in our, not only in the present, but in the past as well. That's why I call Anuvim Aleihem. ויסייסים השני היום האלה ככסוב ערך הזמנם והיום האלה נסתור ודעסים בכל דרך ודרך משפחה ומשפחה מדינה מדינה ועיר ועיר והפורם אלה ים ותחיו להם וזיכרום ליוסף מזרום. I want you to understand why was Purim so prominently, actually Purim took up a prominent place, a prominent position within our calendar. We hardly say about any other holiday. והיום ומי הפור מילה ליד ומתיך היהודים וזיכרום ליוסף מזרום. והרמב״ם, אם נכנס מגילה, says, the last הלוכה, and I would like to ask you one favor. You should not bother me with questions because I don't understand the Rambam either. But however, matter of fact, I did not intend to betray the secret and to show you the Rambam, but it's quite characteristic. Kol Sifrei Hanaviim, no questions, but no questions accepted, no questions answered. We'll just read it and translate it, and that's all. Kol Sifrei Hanaviim, all the prophets, v'chol haksuvim, all the books of the ksuvim, Hilchos Megillah, Perek Beis, Halacha Yudches, the last one. Hasidim Leibotel L'Meis HaMashiach, will be suspended, or canceled, or nullified, in the times of the Messiah, Chutz Megillas Esther, with the exception of Megillas Esther. והרי קיימס מגלססטר ולנדיור כחמיש שחום שתירו like the Pentateuch וכבילכי שלתירו שבעל פה and like the laws of our oral transmission שאינם פתילים לאילם which will never be suspended ואף על פי שכל זכרי נעצורס יבוטל that the remembrance, the memory of all the disasters for which the Jews lived. All the disasters will be forgotten. All the catastrophes will be forgotten, will be erased from memory. Shenema kinishkechu atzor Yisrael, Arishenes Apostle. I mean, the all disasters have been forgotten. Vinistru me'enai, they are hidden from my eyes. Yimei Apurim, the days of Purim, lei botlo, will not be suspended. Shenema v'yimei Apurim ha'ele le'yavru metech ha'yudim v'zichrom le'yosef mezar. Very strange, and it's actually the Rambam is incomprehensible. We don't know what it means. The Nevi'im will be suspended. The Rabbi already, argued with him. But why is Purim, does Purim occupy such a central position in Yahadus? Why? A disaster could have happened. And disaster was of major proportions. Because don't forget the Persian Empire, apparently the Jewish community, almost the total Jewish community, lived within, the Persian Empire. And if Haman's intention had been implemented, that's what the whole Jewish community might have been exterminated, physically exterminated. I mean, exactly what Hitler wanted to do. Hitler succeeded in exterminating one third. Haman, if he had succeeded, he would have exterminated the Jewish community in its entirety. I mean, because the Persian Empire, the Near East actually, encompassed the entire Jewish community. Yes, most probably. But still, it is basically, we spoke last week about Megillas Esther, that it's called the Geras, an epistle, a letter, and Esther insisted, we have interpreted the last parasha, Esther insisted that Megillah, the Geras, be raised to the lofty status of Sefer. What does Sefer mean? A part of the canon of the Kisvei HaKodesh. She demanded that the Megillas Esther be not just a historical document, just an event recorded, even though it is true and the story corresponds, contains the events which transpired, but he wanted the Megillas Esther to be raised to the status of Kisvei HaKodesh, to be endowed with Kedusha, and her request was granted by the Sanhedrin. We explained it. And v'nichtov v'sefer, ma'amar Esther kiyem divrei ha'purim ele, v'nichtov v'sefer, Rashi, v'nichtov v'sefer means it's a part of Kisvei HaKodesh. It is invested with Kedusha in the same manner as Shema Yisrael is endowed with Kedusha, with sanctity. And I told you that time, if it's a book, if it's an Igeres, it's a historical document. There is no need to derive moral lessons from a historical document, even though basically history is a good teacher. And one can derive moral lessons from any historical event. If you study history, it's not just you study the past, but you study certain patterns, you study certain rules, certain guidelines, which may actually, may help you, prove to be very helpful in the future, actually. All right, but whatever. But history basically is a record of events. The very moment the Geras was raised to the status of a sefer, of a book, what's the difference between a book and a Geras? I said last time, Geras means temporary, transitory. You get a letter, you read the letter, you tear up the letter, and you throw the letter into the wastebasket. You don't need a letter. There is no letter which has permanent value. A book, a good book, is a classic. A classic persists, endures, forever. This actually the nature of a classic. The very moment Megillas Esther was raised by the Sanhedrin and declared part and parcel of the Kisvei HaKodesh, of the canon, it has become a book. And a book already, you study a book. A book is a source of knowledge. This is our concept of Kisvei HaKodesh. It's a source of knowledge. So we said, what more lessons can we derive from Megillas Esther? So you derive that the one aloche, that the individual must sacrifice himself for the community. Even though, in the story of Esther. And today, we try to analyze, the responsibility of the individual and the humility the individual should feel, even though he has been chosen by the Ashgoche to be the representative of the Jews and to defend the Jews, he should be humble and not think that he is the only one who can save them and so forth. And I told you, and they spoke. And then the common destiny that even the queen can exempt herself from the destiny, from the universal destiny of the Jewish people and so forth. We said. Of course, and there is many more lessons to be derived. However, but there is something else to be derived from Megillas Esther. If Megillas Esther is a sefer, it's not only Igeres means historical document. The very moment we say V'nichtav HaSefer, it's already symbolic. It's not only a historical document about a certain event, it carries symbolic significance for the future as well. As we say, my survey is similar about it. What is the symbolic content of Megillas Esther? This is the most important. The symbolic content of Megillas Esther is what the Balei HaKabbalah say, and this is the most beautiful interpretation of Mitzvah Samolek. Mitzvah Samolek, I said last Saturday night, and I repeat it again, Mitzvah Samolek, I heard it from my father, in the name of my grandfather, that Amalek basically does not refer anymore to a race, to people, because we have no races anymore. The Rambam about Shiva says it was never zichro amamein. It disappeared. And Amalek apparently persists, still endures. Ki yod al kisko, a hand on the, we'll read it on Purim, there is a hand on the divine throne, Muhammad Adeshem by Amalek, war against, war, God is engaged in war against Amalek, Meteor there, forever and ever. Where is Amalek? God is engaged in war with Amalek? Amalek was a small tribe, a vicious tribe most probably, a vicious tribe. A Bedouin tribe probably, a vicious tribe, used to infiltrate Eretz Israel, used to make raids on villages, on the border villages, like the Al-Fatah makes now on the border kibbutzim. We used to kill women, children. That's what we may gather, I mean, from the Tanakh, you see Amalek. A warrior, a tribe of warriors, probably very brave, and so forth. But this is Muhammad Adeshem Ba'amalek Midor Dor. Now Tishkoch, you should never forget. Amalek is more than a tribe. It's more than a racial group, which already has been, I mean, which is extinct, the racial group. And can you point out Amalek now? So they said that Al-Pi Aloche is any nation, any group. Any nation, any group of people, which has made up its mind to exterminate the Jewish people, either spiritually or physically, that group is, we assign to that group the term and the status of Amalek. The Nazis were Amalekim, no doubt about it. Certain groups within the Arab, and I wouldn't say all Arabs, Chas v'Sholem, but certain groups certainly come under this category. Because my father used the pasuk in Tilim, "L'chu v'nachidim again." If a people writes on its banner, "L'chu v'nachidim again," let us exterminate them. And being a nation, "V'le'izocher shem Yisrael eid b'oretz," and the name of Yisrael should not be mentioned anymore, should not be pronounced anymore. This group, such a group, whether it's a communist group, or a Nazi group, or a fascist group, doesn't matter, or a Muslim group, gets the status of Amalek. And this is true. And from time to time, unfortunately, we encounter such groups. We've encountered Nazis. It was a surprise. Terrible surprise to Jewish people. To emancipate a Jew, it was a surprise. It was a surprise, a stunning surprise to the German Jews, believe me. A stunning surprise. It was a stunning surprise to the civilized world, the Western Jew. But we met with them. We had a confrontation with them, a very unfortunate confrontation. We've lost one third and the best third of our people. But it hasn't, we thought that 1945, with the destruction of Berchtesgaden and all this, it's a goodbye to Amalek. Amalek is not eternal. Amalek is just a temporary phenomenon. It was something anomalous in human history that a Hitler could exist and a Hitler could preach hatred and bigotry and murder and bloodshed and extermination, genocide and so forth. We made a mistake. 20 years after, we have now such voices we hear from the Near East. I mean, what is Faisal's speech, I mean, in Mecca just 2 days ago? It's an Amaleki speech. He proclaimed the jihad, the holy war. The Jews have desecrated the Muslim shrines in Yerushalayim. It's not true, it's false. It's all that Amalek starts with, is disseminating, I mean, false rumors about the Jews. And I'm sorry to say, I'm afraid that certain groups within the communist empire are very close to the Amalek ideology. If not physical extermination, it is spiritual extermination, certainly. Because their policy, I told you many times, the Russian policy vis-à-vis Eretz Israel is not to be explained in terms of realpolitik. You are all making a mistake, and the government in Israel is making a mistake. If they explain the Russian policy policy of complete annihilation of the Medina. Now mind what they say officially, you don't want that. The downfall of the state of Israel. Never mind what they say, they are liars. But the policy is not to be explained and not to be understood in terms of realpolitik, of making trouble for America in the Near East and of getting bases in the Near East. It's by far more than realpolitik. It's based on hatred and hate. Why hate? I don't know. In my opinion, perhaps it's an opinion of an old Rav who perhaps is not sophisticated enough. But in my opinion, is simply a power which ideologically is rooted in atheism must hate the Jewish people who have given to the world the word of God. Basically, we are the apostles of God. We are a people of God. We are the people of the Bible. We are the people of the Sefer HaSfarim. And a movement which was born and reared in atheism. And atheism is not just an auxiliary idea. It's not just an auxiliary idea, a secondary idea. It's the very focus of communism. You know that well. Such a movement must hate the Jewish people, and such a movement cannot tolerate, the rise of the Jew, the emergence of the Jew in the historical arena. This is my interpretation. Perhaps it's wrong. I wish it should be wrong. Anyway. Indeed, that's why Megillas Esther also, you see. Megillas Esther, per se, if you read the story, and Chazal have supplemented very well this story. And don't forget that Chazal lived in Persia. Later, hundreds of years later, but he knew the climate, you understand. After all, Chazal supplemented this story, and they've adorned the story with wonderful details. But basically, the Jews enjoyed in Persia a status of equality. The Gemara in Megillah tells us, I don't know how the Gemara got the number, but the Gemara in Megillah tells us that to the celebration, the great celebration which was staged by Ahasuerus in the third year of his ascending the throne, 12,000 prominent Jews were invited. We enjoy freedom in America, but you've never heard that the president in Washington should invite 12,000 Jews to a reception in Washington. 12,000, that's what Chazal say, Holchul Mishto Shel Achashverosh, have participated in the festival and were invited by His Majesty. So it means they enjoyed full equality. The best proof is that Esther remained queen after her race was discovered, that the queen is a Jewess. And Mordechai was appointed prime minister. And no one complained, apparently. No one complained. So it means they enjoyed freedom. They enjoyed equality. Now, how is it possible that within one day the status should be changed and Haman should prevail upon Ahasuerus to issue an edict of extermination? In a country where the Jews enjoyed freedom. Apparently it is possible, I don't know how. This is exactly what happened in Germany, exactly what happened in Russia. Communist movement, actually the fathers of the communist movement were Jews. Those who were responsible for the revolution, with the exception of Lenin, who were Jews. Trotsky and Kamenev and Zinoviev and all of them. The great minds of communism were Jews, the great minds. The theoreticians of communism were Jews. I'm not speaking about Karl Marx now anymore, but I'm speaking about the Russian communists, the old communists, the so-called, those who were responsible for the revolution in 1918 were Jews. Many of them we don't know, but they were, all Jews. Actually, the ideology was formulated and elaborated by Jews. And how such a movement can now incorporate, can somehow integrate in its anti-Semitism, in its ideology, is beyond me. I can't understand it, but it's a fact, it's a fact. I mean, evidence, if you accumulate evidence, I mean, you begin, as a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, I also, you say, this is nothing, this is just that. And I was opposed to all the anti-Russian demonstrations and so forth. But now, the more I read, and the more Russian papers I come across, I mean, you don't read Russian papers, but I do read the Russian papers. I mean, the material they print now, the funnies and the caricatures they published are reminiscent of the Stürmer and the Angriff of Germany, of the Nazi period, of the Nazi era. I happen to be in Germany. So I know, I mean, I can compare. And he gave a reason. How is it possible, I don't know, how was it possible for Haman to persuade Ahasuerus? Ahasuerus was a democratic king, a liberal king. How could he persuade him? This is a paradox in our history. But there is something else which I want to say. The Chachmei Kabbalah say that basically Amalek can be found in every one of us, in every man. There is an Amaleki in every man. There is instinctual, natural evil in every man. Whatever it is, there is an Amaleki in every man. They call it Amaleki, they call it Teyu Vaveyu. There is an element, a certain instinct of destructiveness, of hate, of envy, of malice, of viciousness in everyone. Call it a molly, call it whatever you want, but there is in it. And basically, man has actually a man, according to Chachmei Kabbalah, and they've beautifully, I mean, interpret a molly, in man, actually, there is always a struggle between the Tzelem Elokim in him and the Amalek in him. There is always a struggle. They are locked in combat. No man can be sure about himself. Not only I cannot be sure about someone else, but I cannot be sure about myself. And from time to time, the Amalek somehow emerges in every man. And wakes up somehow, and every man can become dangerous, can become very aggressive, can become actually a personification of evil himself, the best one. And basically, the Torah over there, the Chachmei Kabbalah say, the purpose of the Torah, the purpose of many laws, is simply to destroy Amalek, to exterminate gradually Amalek, the Amalek who dwells or abides within me. Within me. There are satanic forces in man, and there are divine forces in man. Man is both, he is Satan and an angel. And the Torah said, Zocher asher osa loch Amalek baderer betzeischem mitzrayim, is referring not only to some historical Amalek, to some tribe, what means to the Amalek within the human being himself. Human being himself. And this exactly, and the Chachmei Kabbalah interpret the Megillas Esther in symbols, that actually in a symbolic fashion, that actually it was a struggle between Mordechai and Amalek. This is between the satanic forces in man and the divine image. Sometimes it emerges into a historical arena, but every man should actually look out for his own Amalek, for his own Satan. And that's why in the Chachmei Kabbalah said that Megillas Esther is the story of the struggle between man and Satan. Which will probably end in the victory of man. This according to Chachmei Kabbalah. It's not only Chachmei Kabbalah, it has penetrated into the Chachmei Adrush as well. Of course, it's a historical document, it's a Igeres, As a sefer, it has a certain symbolism. It's symbolic as far as our history is concerned. Our history, the surprises we are confronted with, unexpectedly. We suddenly see a change in attitude toward us, and hatred which is not warranted, hatred which cannot be explained, and also the individual, problem, of every one of us when he faces problems, which will determine, his actually future course or his future life, whether it will be related to Tzitzel HaMalekim or to Amalek. This is the Chachmei HaKabbalah, all of them. In a world, a man, there is no need. This is the main difference. Actually, future course or his future life, whether it will be related to Tzitzel HaMalekim or to Amalek. This is the Chachmei HaKabbalah, all of them. In a world, a man, there is no need. This is the main difference between Yehadus, the Megillas Esther, and Western civilization. Yehadus has never rejected, human conquest, or the human greatness, and the human ability, to conquer the environment. Yadus is, in this regard, so progressive that no other religion can simply catch up with Yadus. Take, for instance, medicine. It's a very strange thing. All religions had problems with medicine. The whole problem, if God makes you sick, what right do you have, to heal, or to apply a cure the sick? To employ, certain means, to restore your health. Problem? Christian science hasn't overcome the problem yet. It's a fact. It's a sect in Christianity, an American sect. It's not a sect somewhere in the Orient. It's an American sect which rejects medicine. And the problem is, if you are sick, so it's the will of God, so let God make you well. What right does man have to intervene? Yehadis was never bothered by this. It was never troubled by this at all. The rabbi, not the reshus being only is permitted. He should. It means duty. And God himself is called the healer. The reifel chol doso. Or reifel chol tachleichi, the healer. Never have a problem. The Ramban says, whoever takes sick, and don't consult a doctor, the Shefer Domim. He's a murderer. Commits suicide. We certainly believe and we certainly accept the thesis that man should control the environment and should gain control over certain insensate, certain mechanical forces in order to promote his physical welfare. There is no doubt about it. Yehadus is outspoken of it. However, and when the Rebbe Yishlam created man, the Rebbe Yishlam told Adam, "Pruvu umilus oretz, v'kifshua, conquer the land." You mean conquer nature. How can you conquer nature? By eavesdropping on nature's secrets. How can you eavesdrop? Through the scientific method. You simply steal the secrets from nature. And by knowing her secrets, you control nature, you see. And sometimes you work against her, because when she becomes malicious and vicious. However, there is, as far as this is concerned, Western civilization and Yehadus go hand in hand. There is no discrepancy. But as far as man is concerned, the worth of man and his role, here Yehadus and Western civilization part company. Western civilization basically is optimistic about men, very optimistic. Western civilization thinks that man, if left alone, will finally become not only a powerful being, it's not enough, will become also a good, kind being, an ethical being, a moral being. He is somehow the same. It is to some extent true. The others will also accept it. That there is something in man, no doubt about it. There is something, there is some secret spring within a man. Or there is some secret power in man, which drives him, to be good, and to be noble. There is something which redeems man, within man, which if utilized, may redeem and purge him, cleanse him, elevate him. And that's on this basis all the natural systems of ethics and morality are. Rest, You leave man will take care of himself. He does not need divine guidance. This is what Western civilization says, secular civilization. Here Yahadus comes in and says, no matter how powerful man is, and no matter how intelligent he is, there is a Satan in man. You can never be sure. The Satan is also intelligent, also powerful. You can never be sure. Who will win the battle? The Satan or the angel? You can never be sure. There is a source of Satan. There is a Satan in him. There is malice in man. There is viciousness in man. There is evil in man. Man cannot be left alone. Man will never become an ethical person, a great moral personality if left alone. Man needs divine guidance. Don't rely on his own norm, on his own moral law. If there is no faith in God, man will be able to fly, yes, to fly to the moon. But he won't be able to live in peace with his next door neighbor. Don't believe man. Yehadus, very strange. Yehadus thought very highly of man, but Salam Elkim was a Sodom. On the other hand, also had an opinion of man, a very pessimistic opinion of man, that man is a beast as well. And here is